Tucson, Arizona is expanding its use of renewable energy resources at a rapid pace. And Tucson Electric Power is leading the charge. We're talking all things renewable today, as well as learning about powerful partnerships, elevating our community's ability to reach our sustainability goals successfully. Our guest today has a long and diverse history with TEP, and you are certainly going to find out more about that. And if you would like to be up to the minute on a myriad of energy efficiency projects and the expansion of renewable energy initiatives currently being executed by TEP, you will definitely want to stay with me for the duration. Hey, everybody, I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Down to Earth Tucson. I want to share with you a bit more about Eric because his experience speaks volumes about the depth and breadth of his knowledge and expertise with TEP. He really goes way back, and I think it gives you a feel for his big picture credibility. So, Eric, you've got cred. I haven't even introduced you officially, but you have a lot of cred. Quite impressive. Eric joined TEP as corporate counsel in 2000. Which is almost 20 years ago. I know you get that math, Eric. After earning a bachelor's degree in political science from, and I have to say it on air, ASU, but he redeemed himself because he has a Juris Doctorate from the University of Arizona. So he ended up as a Wildcat. He advanced through management positions in land resources and environmental services and was promoted to the Senior Director of Transmission and Environmental Services in 2014. He was promoted to his current position in 2018. In his current role, Eric oversees grid operations, which is a really big deal, and environmental compliance and policy for the company, also a very big deal. And I'm adding a little bit more about Eric because I normally don't do as much about my guests, but I think it speaks volumes about the TEP culture as a whole, which is one of giving back, of being involved in our community, and of people going above and beyond their everyday jobs to make a difference. Eric has lived in Tucson since 1979, which is a really long time ago, and has served his community by participating in many volunteer activities and serving on various philanthropic boards. Eric currently serves on Board of Trustees for the Arizona Sonoran Desert Museum, immediate past chair, and on the board of the Nature Conservancy and on the advisory board of the Friends of Saguaro National Park. And Eric, what I know is that it's really a lot of work. I've been down that road myself, so I know it's a lot of work. So please join me in welcoming Eric Bakken, Vice President of Systems Operations and Environmental Services at TEP. Eric, you can tell I'm really excited to have you here.
Great to be here. I'm excited to talk a little bit about what's going on at TEP.
There's a lot about. Yeah. There's not a little bit, there's a lot about. And you and I talked a little bit before the show, and it's like, what do our listeners want to hear? And basically what they want to hear is how we're moving to a more renewable energy platform. So without exaggeration, when I looked at some of the notes that you sent me to prep for the show, there are so many sustainability initiatives and programs going on with TEP that I'm not quite sure where to begin, but let's dive in. Let's start with the three biggies. Three big renewable energy systems being built. So take it away.
Sure. Yeah, we've got a lot on our plate over the next couple of years. We're bringing on, like you mentioned, three big renewable energy projects. First one is Oso Grande, which is a 250-megawatt wind project coming out of New Mexico. And so that'll be a big part of our portfolio going forward. We're also working on a little bit smaller wind project connecting directly to our system called Borderlands Wind. That's about 100 megawatts. And then finally, we've got a large solar project that we're working on right here in town, about 100 megawatts, but it's got a 30-megawatt battery with it. So that'll be a new kind of configuration for us. We really think that that's going to help us kind of manage the energy coming out of Wilmont Energy. And so that's about 450 megawatts that we're bringing on in the next couple of years. And like you mentioned, it is something that we realize not only from a system and sustainability standpoint, but our customers are really looking for more renewable energy to be part of the mix that we provide to each one of our residential and commercial customers as well.
So I never play stump the guest, never. I never do. But this just, it's like I always say this just in, when you're deciding because of your experience, because of the job you hold, because of your management interaction, what drives the decision of wind versus solar? I mean, you have to have a mix. I understand that. But is it cost? Is it how much time it's going to take? Is it the availability of those big wind turbines? What are some of the things that go into the decision to making the choice? Okay, we're going to do wind in New Mexico and we're going to do solar here. You've got to know the answer to that because of what you've done.
Right. So it's really the complementary profile is the easiest way to put it. We have solar coming online during the day. And so it spikes middle of the day, late in the afternoon, in terms of the output of those facilities. Whereas the wind complements that nicely because it's usually, and we see this specifically in New Mexico, blowing in the morning. And then it kind of dies down in terms of production during the middle of the day when our solar is at its highest and then picks back up
it
in the afternoon.
It does pick back up.
And the biggest benefit is that it's actually blowing throughout the night. The wind is blowing and turning those turbines, producing energy, which allows us to continue to feed renewable energy to our customers.
I can tell you that my husband is from Deming, New Mexico. And one of the things that drove him crazy is the wind blows there a lot.
That's right.
And now quite a few of my children and grandchildren live in Taos. And when you're planning something outside, you can plan on the wind picking up around 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock
right.
Because you know it's like batten down the hatches because the wind is going to start blowing. So it's very much a regular pattern. And they live in Taos. So I know yours are... Are yours near Farmington? Where are the wind farms?
One is actually closest to Roswell, New Mexico.
Got it.
So if you ever want to take a trip out there, we can arrange for that.
A tour?
Yeah.
I would like it.
Maybe go check out some of the other tourist attractions that they have in Roswell. and then we've got another one that is just across the border in Arizona. But again, the idea is to really, you know, just like the sun is such a tremendous resource for us here in southern Arizona, the wind that we're tapping into is one of the best resources that's out there today in terms of how much energy it can produce. Because like you said, it is blowing a high percentage of the time and it's a fairly strong wind. So it's a great resource for us to kind of match and to complement the amount of solar that we're bringing in.
Yeah, and that makes so much sense. I can't believe I never thought to ask that question, but now I'm glad I did. Okay, another favorite topic of mine to talk about, and I don't really understand. It's kind of weird how excited I am about the partnership with the U of A and TEP. And maybe one of the reasons is because Dave Hutchins wouldn't tell me about it, and he teased me about it. He said, oh, I'm going to have some really good news for you. And I had to wait a couple of months. It was worth the wait. So tell us about the partnership with the U of A and the renewable energy deal.
Yeah, so as we were looking at bringing on the solar resources as well as the wind, we were having conversations with the University of Arizona to provide them with 100% of their power that comes from TEP with renewable resources. And so that led to a larger conversation about the fact that we're bringing on more solar and more wind, and can we expand those resources to meet the U of A's needs? And again, it was really the complementary kind of aspect of the solar and the wind that allowed us to work with U of A to provide all of their, and your sustainability listeners will get this, their scope 2 emissions from renewable power.
Tell me what that is.
And reduce those to zero. So scope 2 is really energy that is provided to a particular customer. Scope one would be energy that you generate yourself, or emissions that you generate yourself through vehicles or through some type of generation on site. So they're working on that. But we found an opportunity here to provide them with renewable power, both from Oso Grande and from the Wilmont Energy Center solar resource, to give them 100% of their scope 2 emissions from renewable power, reduce their scope 2 emissions.
And of all the presidents we've had far too many. From where I sit, President Robbins has been the most supportive and the most vocal and the most out front leader in terms of sustainability and combating climate change on so many levels. I mean, he's really being proactive. He's taking a national role. So the timing was right. But what I'm confused about is, why did you have to get permission from the Corporation Commission? I mean, I understand your role with them and rate increases and all that. That's just a given.
Right.
But why would you have to get permission for a project like this?
This was really groundbreaking for us and for the U of A, and to some extent for the Arizona Corporation Commission. So we had to put together a special contract to be able to provide them with the energy that they need at a price that's competitive. And so that's why the Arizona Corporation Commission was involved in approving, and it was unanimous decision to move forward with this project.
Were you doing the happy dance?
There was a lot of texts with thumbs up going around when the ACC approved
it. A lot of texts. I love that, right. It operationalized the text chain.
Yeah, right.
It's just such an incredibly changing world. So I would say, having been a very valued partner of TEP, you're ever on the move, ever on the move. Like every time somebody comes or something new, something's changed. So can you talk about, first of all, the planning that's involved in my, it like boggles my mind, but resource planning and new carbon emissions goals. Tell us about that, where we're at.
Right. So again, we realize that we need to find new and innovative ways to reduce our carbon emissions. And so one of the things that we wanted to do was to really leverage this partnership with the U of A, really tap into the expertise that that they have. And so we started a partnership with them a few years back, just kind of looking at various risks. Obviously, the carbon risk was high on that list. So we thought we would continue that relationship, leverage the expertise, the experience that the U of A has in a group called CLIMAS, to help us understand better what we might be able to do in terms of carbon emissions. So we're working with them to look at various scenarios to be able to reduce our carbon emissions through changes in our generation portfolio. Obviously, bringing on more renewables is a big part of that. But we wanted to look at it from a regional perspective as well. And so they're also looking at transportation reductions through electrification, electric vehicles essentially, to help us understand better what impact that would have on overall carbon reductions as we look to reduce our carbon from generation. So we're looking at it from more of a regional perspective. And the idea is that ultimately, as we move through our resource planning process, that we will have a goal, a target for carbon reductions for TEP and for the region that we can all kind of come together on and try to use kind of some of the community relationships that we have to be able to drive carbon down for the Tucson area.
And it's one of those things where when you read, like I read, I got a report last week from, you know, I think it's Scientific American, about the CO2 emissions, the greenhouse gas emissions for 2019. And it's really awful. I mean, it's I don't like to talk about gloom, doom, and sadness, but as a planet, we're not doing a great job. And this encourages me, and I know we're not the only community in the United States looking at ways to reduce our CO2 emissions. What kind of impact do you think it has on the community? And I don't mean just the reduction of greenhouse gas. I mean, do you feel as though the big overall planning and commitments and moving forward on the part of TEP has a sweet spot for community as well? Because I know I do. I'll be right up front about it. When I see what you're doing, it makes me feel better. But is that part of the Is that part of the sweet spot? Is that, does that make sense? It's like you want to do the right things for the community, and this is going to help because we're in a lot of trouble, folks.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned I've been with TEP now for 20 years, and we've always had a central role in how the community moves forward. I think this is a key initiative, and there are a lot of partners out there that we're working with, the City of Tucson, Pima County, the U of A, obviously, some of the other large commercial customers that we have in the service territory, as well as working with customers and residential customers to be able to provide them with options to help them reduce their carbon emissions. We know that we're part of the puzzle, that we're part of the solution, and so we're doing everything we can to make people aware and to provide a place where we can all come together, understanding the risk that CO2 emissions has for the community, but also, as you mentioned, kind of on a larger national and even world scale, we need to do our part.
Wow.
That's really what's driving our initiative forward, to look at this not only from a TEP perspective, but also to look at it from a community perspective and really leverage those partnerships and relationships that we have with all the various stakeholders in the Tucson area Southern Arizona.
And I see it more and more and more, powerful partnerships. And one of my favorite expressions is the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And I love that you have put together an advisory council. I think it's really, really wonderful. And I was kind of surprised at some of the partners, pleasantly. I mean, Sierra Club gives me a run for my money. I can tell you that. They really do.
Right.
But there, you have to have the agitators pushing for what they are, which is pure in its intention. And then, of course, someone like, Technicians for Sustainability, Kevin's been on board and his wife, and it's a B Corp and on and on and on. I mean, it's just all good. So it's private sector, small businesses,
that's right,
national partners. So it just keeps you from having a myopic
organizations.
Look. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, that made me happy.
And they're an important part of the conversation. They need to be at the table. And that's why, as part of the stakeholder group that we've put together for our resource planning, it's important to have a broad spectrum of perspectives at that table to help inform us the direction that we need to go.
Right, right. It makes it a conversation. I was really a little bit surprised about Pima Council on Aging, which is another great organization in Tucson. And is that because of their impact on residential for seniors? Why are they a partner?
I think it's exactly that.
Yeah.
Because they do have an important voice, as well as a number of our customers are at that point where they're looking at maybe putting on rooftop solar, but don't know kind of what the expense is going to be and what the ultimate kind of output is going to be from those solar facilities that they put on their rooftops. And so we thought it was important that they be a part of the conversation as well.
I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
I was like, what? PCOA? You got to be kidding me. I also love to talk about EVs, electric vehicles. It's still kind of a mystery to me. And we have had people from TEP on about it. We're going to have them again. Is there a lot of progress there? Because I always wonder how we're going to get from here to there, because I think more and more people are going to go to EVs. And I'm understanding it better now. It's not going to be charging stations along I-10 a lot. It's going to be charging stations in my house. And locally, they're showing up. It's so exciting to see them in shopping centers,
yeah, right,
and other places where, yeah, you can plug in and shop. And so that's another place that you're looking at really moving forward, because you're going to have to provide infrastructure.
Yeah. I mean, like I mentioned, it is an important part of the overall effort to reduce carbon emissions. We realize that we need to walk the talk, so to speak. And so we've got some efforts just internally, even with respect to our fleet to try to move more toward electric vehicles. Sometimes that's a little tough when you're talking about large bucket trucks. But certainly there are some options out there that we're looking
at.
And then, you know, as far as customers bringing on more EVs or adopting more EVs, buying more EVs, we're looking at ways to structure our rates so that it really incentivizes folks to take a hard look at bringing EVs into their vehicle mix. We understand that the adoption rates may start out relatively slowly. There's still some expense, incremental expense with purchasing an EV. But certainly, to the extent that we can control kind of the cost of powering that EV, we want to make sure that we're doing what we can through innovative rate structures, time of use, other rate structures. I think we've got a couple coming out here in the near future that will incent folks to take a hard look at EVs and make, you know, if it makes sense for them, make that choice and move forward with purchasing an EV as their primary vehicle potentially.
And the hope that I have, because I feel I've been doing this a decade, is like, so solar was so expensive. And I mentioned this on another podcast the other day. Paul Bonavia sat in that very chair. He was preceded Dave Hutchins as the CEO. And when he talked to me, it's 10 years ago, Eric, about the cost of solar versus coal, I thought we're never going to get there because nobody can afford it. And look where we are. And 10 years isn't really a long time, and it's accelerating. So I think the same is going to happen with EVs, or it might be, you know, more expensive in the beginning, but then as the increase in use and the barriers to the mindset, I think that's going to be a big one. I don't want to run out of power and having people understand that's not going to happen. And I mean, talk about, I can't get my head around driverless cars, let alone driving to Phoenix on my EV, but I can.
Right. I mean, we are here in the West, right?
The old West. That's right.
And everybody likes their vehicle. Everybody likes the, you know, the response you get from a gas engine or a diesel engine. But certainly, I think people are taking a harder look at EV, especially as you mentioned, the costs come down. And part of that, I think, is going to be battery cost. As I mentioned, we've got 100 megawatt solar coming on, but it also has a 30 megawatt battery. And what we're seeing is that those battery costs are starting to come down. And it's the same technology that they use in EVs. So as those costs start to come down, and we see longer lives with that battery technology, I think we'll start to see higher adoption rates. And as people start to realize that, you know, they are going to have the infrastructure necessary to charge when they need it, and that they can do that economically, I think you will start to see higher adoption rates. 10 years? Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Can you imagine if you we're sitting here?
Yeah, exactly. If I'm back here in 10 years.
I'm not going to say how old I'm going to be then. I'm not, because I don't feel the age I am now. But it's like, I hope I'm sitting here with you saying, Eric, can you believe it? And not sounding like, Eric, can you believe it? Because I'll be close to 80. And but you know, 70.
No, I don't believe that.
70 is the new 50. I'm just going to be 50 this year. I would say that one of the first things I noticed when I got some of my notes from, you know, people, all of my guests talk about, they send us usually things that they would like to have covered, and I add my own things, and I Gina-ize it, as I say. But I would say that this is the first time anybody sent me fun facts. And Eric, I loved it. Like, I flippin' loved it when I was reading them, and I think we should share some of them. Like, who... It makes it so relevant for the listener, because I am one of those people. I'm listening to you. So tell us about I love that I'm going to do one. The Oso Grande Wind Project will be TEP's largest renewable energy resource when it's completed. And what about, I loved about the Wilmot, largest local renewable energy system. I think that's like super, super exciting. And then Red Horse, current largest renewable energy resource. Where's Red Horse? Oh, Wilcox, right?
Yep, just outside of Wilcox.
I went there.
Yeah.
Is that where the sheep are?
That's where the sheep are, yep.
I went and saw the sheep.
Another fun fact.
That was
another fun
fact. We
use sheep to help manage vegetation at their renewable project.
I wish that day could have been totally videoed. We videoed some of it. but it was an excellent adventure. Finding the people, finding the sheep, finding the exit once we finished filming.
Right.
Because it's a maze. And we thought, you know, Kelly and I and her kids were with us. We thought, we can find our way out. No, we could not. Thank God that the Wrangler.
They are big facilities. And I mean, that's one of the things that we kind of bring to the
huge.
Table. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, talk about, I call it now a vast solar array, because that's what it is. So I thought it was great. Is there anything else that, other fun facts? Those were the ones that really stuck out to me, except, and I hope it's okay that I'm reading them, because I really did my homework, but for the Oso Grande, I love this scale. Give
that
me a sense
is
of scale.
Right.
Oh my gosh.
That's one I wanted to make sure and include. I mean, we're looking at close to 650 feet high.
Which is higher than the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
You gave us a frame
like
of reference.
Twice the size. I've got a nice graphic that actually shows that. And then it's also got the Washington Monument beat by probably close to 100 feet. So we're looking at some,
and the arch
some
in
big
St. Louis.
Turbines. Yeah.
Right. I was reading that. I'm thinking, no, I do want to go there. I really do want to go there and see it, because that's especially standing next to it. And then the early TEP renewable resources, I mean, we had a cabin in Greer before it burned down. So there's Springerville Solar that was built in 2004. I think that's another fun fact.
Yeah, for
2004, that's like
I think in
the
2004,
dark ages.
It was one of the largest in North America. Obviously, that's been beat multiple times over now, but we were one of the leaders with adopting renewable resources, particularly solar, and had one of the largest for, you know, it may have been a month, but
you know,
because people were building quite a bit of solar back then. And,
but
and
you had number one for a while.
Yeah, that's right.
You had number one for a while. And that's another thing, total, you know, I have this thing, if we were on video, you'd see me point to my head, this just in. What was wonderful to me, this was long before Mrs. Green was even a thought in my head, is the football facility that TEP built for Springerville, because that's what TEP does. And I don't think you have to. I think there's lots of corporations that are out there,
right,
and it's all bottom line driven and not community. But those kids, it gets cold there.
That's right.
And they have a great covered football stadium.
They have a dome.
And in
Springerville dome,
there's not much more to do than sports, I think. It's like not a lot happening in Springerville. That's just, it's a nice place to visit, but I literally would not want to live there.
But it's a great community. They do have
a
lot of outdoor activity.
It is. And there's a lot of hunting and fishing and outdoor biking and hiking. So yes, I don't want to slam it. It's just, the whole conversation was around shopping opportunities, and shame on me. There's not a lot of shopping. There are good places to eat, too. So it's
there
fun.
Is a good general store, though.
Don't we ever go there? We have spent hours in that store.
Yeah, that's right.
We bring everybody. It's Western Drug.
Yep.
And it has everything from soup to nuts and everything in between. It's Americana.
Yep. It's
when
great.
You go in there, there's a sewing center and any kind of gun you ever wanted to buy. And if you forgot your paper towels, candy, they have a little ice cream thing in there. So it's fun. I have literally spent maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours in that store, because there's nothing like it. Nothing
and when
left.
When I'm up that way, I like to do a little bit of fishing, and it's always a go-to place to stop and pick up some fishing supplies if you're running a little bit low.
And plenty of camo gear.
Yeah, right.
our girls, and even buggers in school, bought some camo gear there. Where do you go fishing? I just have to ask. Like
along
the Snake
the
River?
Colorado.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then also the North Fork of the White River.
Yeah.
I do a little bit of fishing up
North
there.
Fork.
So,
know that.
Some,
I mean,
Native Apache trout up that way. And so,
it's a beautiful
it's
place.
Absolutely gorgeous.
Right here in Arizona.
Yeah,
people
right.
don't understand. There's 8,000 feet.
Right.
I look at the temperature for Greer almost every day. And it's, you know, when the snow is coming, it was really a place that my heart lives. So did we miss anything? I know I got a little bit off on tangents, which I hope makes it fun. But do we miss anything?
One other interesting fun fact is we looked at the partnership with U of A now that we've got that solidified. And as you mentioned, I'm an ASU grad, so don't hold that against me. But We are looking at an opportunity to maybe put the U of A logo, the A, on a couple of those large wind turbines so that everybody understands.
Are you kidding?
Something we're looking at.
If you
I said
that,
if we put some A's up there, then maybe one little pitchfork somewhere.
I know. And let's pay a little bit of homage to ASU and all they're doing in the sustainability space. They are. They're leaders in sustainability. They have the biomimicry center. And so as we only talk about them as rivals when it comes to basketball. Let's be honest, because they're a great university. They're innovators. They're creative. Michael Crow is a freaking branding genius. Let's be honest. So I don't ever...
I'm going to catch some grief, so I'm not going to say a whole lot more. I'm just going to let you...
You are. I have to say some nice
things. What
she
said.
Because I look at what they're doing, and if every university in the country was doing what they're doing in the sustainability and social justice space, it'd be a really good thing. And that's hard to come at my
mouth. Although I will say, U of A's got them beat with meeting 100% of their energy requirements with renewable energy.
See, that's what I thought you might say. Now that when Michael Crow sees that, he'll be saying, okay, how can we do
exactly. it? Exactly. Nothing like a little competition.
That's the right kind of competition.
And if it's
really
competition
healthy.
To drive down CO2 emissions, you can't beat it.
No, you can't. You really can't believe it. And I don't know about you, but my face almost hurts from smiling. I thought this was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I learned a lot again. I do want to go see the Roswell facility when the A is on it so I can take some pictures. But New Mexico is the land of enchantment. I mean, it's beautiful up there. We spend a lot of time in Taos because of our new baby and our two
gorgeous,
daughters and other grandchildren.
Gorgeous area of the
it
country.
Is. It's really beautiful, and it's not 114 in the summer. So we try to get away as much as we can. So this was great fun. And you know a lot, and I hope you'll come back. I always see you at the Green Awards.
It'd be my pleasure to come back.
Yeah, and there'll always be more to do it, so we'll have to talk to Francisco.
And I think we may be working a little bit more closely together as we start to, we've been really focused on sustainability from a generation standpoint. What can we do to drive down CO2, look at reducing other emissions, reducing water use? But we're really ramping up this year to start sustainability at TEP, our operations.
I'm
so look
excited.
Forward to working with you on that. I think we've got a few things kind of on the schedule already.
I know. I'm
some
really excited.
Some lunch and learns for our employees, and then really start to look at some initiatives for sustainability with our operations here just in Tucson. So
I know.
Really
I'm
excited
glad
about
you brought that up.
That
makes me smile even more because, as I say to people, sustainability is an inside job, and you start with the inside of the company. And there's so many good things going on already, but I don't know if every single person that works for TEP knows about all the great things you're doing because they go to work. And I hope that I can be a part of shedding some really bright lights on that and upping the green game.
Yeah,
I love
that's
it.
Right.
I'm very excited.
We've got a green team now.
I know. I'm really, really
that's
excited.
It's raring to go.
Yeah.
So we're looking forward to that, looking forward to the partnership. It's a big part of what I do is think about sustainability for TEP, for our customers, and try to drive that initiative forward. And it's, it's something that's taken on kind of national significance, I think, now. So you're right in the forefront and, being able to work with you and kind of shape what sustainability looks like for TEP, I think is going to be a great opportunity.
I'm so glad you said that, especially going into 2020. One of the things that I do believe, it sounds so self-serving, but it's really true, that Mrs. Green's World brings to the table is I and my team touch many places in the city. We partner with the Department of Environmental Services. We are aware of all of their programs. There's so many, even with our partnership with Chapman Automotive Group, they are doing so many things in the green space, learning about recycling. So what I'm being able to bring to green teams that I consult with is that expertise, because they did a video of me recently, the Department of Environmental Services, and it was like stump Mrs. Green, and they did. It was not, I was not
That's
happy.
That's not easy to do.
They had a bunch of recyclables, and they said, is this, can it be recycled? And I said, yes. And they're like, no. And there were about at least 7 or 8 things that I thought you could. So if I don't know it, the man on the street, woman on the street doesn't know it. So we're going to do a lot to focus on what's recyclable and what's not to lower the contamination rate for the city. And we all win with that too.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, a big part of what we're looking at is kind of the standard recycle, reduce, reuse type program. But I think we need to go beyond that. And some of the work that you're doing kind of will help us understand what we can do beyond kind of that standard recycle, reuse, reduce type program.
I know. I'm so excited. I can't believe it. So if there's nothing else, the last words from me, and this is definitely from my heart, I really wish that I could wave a magic wand and this country would be at 100% renewables, and that is not going to happen. That being said, it's complicated, it's costly, but DEP is moving in the right direction always as far as I am concerned. But the takeaway I want for our listeners, and I have to remind myself constantly, the first R is reduce. So instead of saying, why isn't TEP doing more? Why aren't they doing more? How come we're not seeing more of this? To me, the question starts with, what more can I do? And I have to remind myself of that. It's easy to put the responsibility on somebody else. And as we really go into 2020, I'm going to be writing about that. I'm going to be incorporating in the show. What more can I do? Because at the end of the day, it's consumers that use the electricity. It's really,
that's right.
You're producing it, we're using it. And there are many energy-saving programs that you have on the website. You can go to look at the energy efficiency page, ways to reduce your own energy use, and spread the word and tell people how great budget billing is or time-of-use budget billing is. So for 2020, we're about doing that, focusing on the first R, and making sure that it's something that we look at first as we go forward, because I think it really matters in the days and weeks and months to come, especially, as I said, when you think about what the numbers are going to look like for 2019. So thank you for being here and for being on this journey with me. It's been absolutely delightful.
Yeah, my pleasure. Great talking with you, and look forward to working with you in 2020.
It's really, really fun. And I always ask myself, is it fun? It's always fun. And of course, I always end the same way by thanking all of you, our wonderful listeners, for being a part of our world. And let's all commit to being a part of a sustainable and socially just world this year, because we need every one of us. It's all hands on deck. So make it a great green day. And remember, the first R is reduce. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.